Welcome to the Winterest Business Lunch with me, Jisuke. I'm going to go ahead and give our number out, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, because our expert on the economy and the markets and personal finance, Terry Savage, you know her, you love her, especially her sound and good advice, is with us. Hi, Terry.
Oh, hello. Here we are. Dow up over 1,000. It's days like this and weeks like this that humble anyone trying to predict or give advice on the markets.
Terry, I was going to wait to ask you, am I allowed to be happy today? Is this a good sign? Was that the worst of it?
See, you can exhale partially. I'll tell you why. I mean, I'm thrilled that the market's up yesterday and today. I mean, that's what we really want. We want signs that we're going to get through this. What worries me is the next economic shoe to drop, not the market speculation right now, but there's going to be a philosophical conflict about it, whether it's safe for everybody to go out and live again or whether you have to contain yourself for a while longer. And that kind of uncertainty won't be good, and it will lead to uncertainty about the economy. So when I say I don't think it's over, I know it's not over. I know we're going to have big days both ways. But there's an old saying in the stock market, don't fight the Fed. The Fed has unlimited capacity to print money, and when you get it together with the government, which gets together even with philosophical differences and decides to push more money out the door, that liquidity has to go somewhere, and a lot of it's going into the stock market for sure.
Terry, you said you've already been inundated with this one question from a lot of people, and I am guessing it's, should I get back in?
Yeah, so this is very difficult because, first of all, I'd like to take credit for telling everybody to get all out at Dow 27,000 when I was writing those letters. But all I was ever saying was, you've made a lot of profits, take some out and put it in cash. We'll come back to that idea of cash or liquidity in a minute, so that you can sleep, sell down to the sleeping point. And the rest of it, I've always known I can never pick tops and bottoms. Gee, I started out, I was a founding member, the first woman, girl then, trader on the floor of the Chicago Board Options Exchange.
Woo-hoo!
When it started. And gee, I figured out real quickly, I'm not a great trader. I've been a really good investor over the long run just by betting on the future of America. But trading is not my game. So what I've always wanted people to do is stay there for the long run, determine what your horizon is, your risk tolerance. And then, I think as I look back, I will remember that I warned people that they should take some off the table. So having wanted you to take it off the table, I want it off the table for a long time. It's not about getting back in. I'm not your person for when to buy and when to sell. I'm for how to allocate your assets to adjust to the possibilities of risk.
Does
that make sense? I'm trying to duck because that's never been my long suit about when to get in or even when to get out.
But you're about the long game and you're about being able to... Yes, and your instincts have always been right on. That's why you have such a loyal following of listeners. It's true.
Gee, I want to quote an old Savage truth. Good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment.
Well,
think about that.
Yep. Well, I believe anything that you say. 312-981-7200. The calls and texts are already coming in, and Terry is going to answer those questions for you. Terry Savage is on Winterest Business Lunch here to answer your questions. Terry, you want to take some calls now?
I want to make one key point before we take these calls.
Sure.
In addition to the fact that the stock market's up, the Dow up 1,000 points, there is another big headline that relates to chicken money. For the first time, and it looks like ever, we will close with negative interest rates on Treasury bills. The one-month Treasury bill is yielding negative 0.02%, 3-month, negative 0.03%. So the fact is that now we have briefly touched into negative interest rates, which means, in effect, that all of us who put money in Treasury bills, we knew we weren't going to get a lot of interest, but it was chicken money. We cared about the return of our money, are now, in effect, sort of paying the government a little bit to hold our money and keep it safe. That happened because everybody piled into chicken money, scared. So it's a first, and I know the Fed chairman has spoken out forcefully against negative interest rates, but that's where the market drove rates, short-term treasuries, in negative territory just briefly.
But still nothing wrong with having chicken money, though.
You know, this is a tough complaint. I'm sure there are people out there going, what are these people talking about? They're not getting any interest on their money. They have money, at least, and I understand that. So part of the stimulus bill, fortunately, is going directly to individuals. We might discuss that. We don't have all the details on the stimulus. A lot of sole, I want a second quick point, a lot of sole proprietors, gig economy workers, everybody from real estate brokers who are not technically employees to Uber drivers to nail technicians or that work on their own, that kind of a thing. All of those people wondering, what will I get from the government? Well, for sure you're going to get the $1,200 a person and $500 for each child. The issue is going to be, and we haven't quite seen the final results of the details of this stimulus bill, that maybe you will qualify for unemployment. That was something the Democrats were pushing for. Maybe as a small business, even if you're a sole proprietor without a, quote, payroll, maybe you will be able to apply to the Small Business Administration for a loan. So I think that'll come out in the next 24 hours when we see the final bill. But, yeah, there are a lot of people not worrying about the return on their money or even the return of their money. They would like to have some money, and I think this bill is going to deal with a lot of that.
Absolutely. That puts everything into perspective. Let's talk to Mike. Hi, Mike. This is G, and what is your question for Terry?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I heard on some news media, I don't know if it was this station or somewhere else, that the major mortgage companies would defer your mortgage payments if you're either furloughed or laid off. So I called mine, which is Chase, and I'm kind of confused because what they told me was they won't defer it, but if you cannot pay it for like 90 days and you won't be penalized, it won't go on your, it won't go against your credit rating, and you won't be getting calls from collectors. Is that true or am I confused on something?
The answer is there may be language in this bill about deferred mortgage payments. That's going to be a very big issue, not to mention rent. You were smart to call the bank to get on record. I can tell you now that I've talked to some people in the industry, and they're trying to figure out a strategy. They're competitors, but they all want to do the best for their clients. They recognize you cannot get blood out of a stone and that a lot of their mortgage holders are not going to be able to pay. So the answer is we don't know yet, but please don't stress about this for the moment because this time around, there are so many people in the same boat. You can be sure that as part of this legislation, there will be ability to either defer your mortgage payments and add them on to the end of your term, which ultimately could actually cost you a little bit more, or there will be other solutions. I'm not sure if there will be an industry-wide national policy coming out of this or whether the industry leaders will get together. But I know that the roof over your head is everyone's, and food, are everyone's dearest concern. Don't panic on that because this is not a one-by-one case. This is not about people who are greedy and put nothing down. This is about the heartland of America, and there will be a plan so that you can get through this. I'm absolutely sure of it.
Thanks. So by waiting, like deferring them, like till, you know, say if I miss three payments, that's going to make me three payments out more. Why did you say that might cost me more? Because the rate's the same, right?
Oh, because it extends, in a technical sense, it will extend the amount of time you're paying interest. But the point is, I don't know that will be the plan, but there will be a plan. Every major mortgage lender, maybe there'll be a national plan and maybe a law as part of this, something that comes out of this stimulus as a requirement. But for sure, there will be a lot of attention to what happens to people who cannot make their mortgage payments because they are out of work. And I just dial the temperature down a little bit because without doubt, I can assure you that you're not losing your house over this.
Thanks, Perfect. Mike,
All
for
right,
your call.
So. Thank
yeah.
you.
Okay. Sure, it's a concern that everybody has.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
everyone.
Lots of people. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to Sharon. Mm-hmm. Hi, Sharon. This is G, but what's your question for Terry Savage?
Hi. I'm a 78-year-old woman that's still working. I have a SEP IRA. I am planning on retiring within the next year, and I am watching what I have plummet. And I really don't know what to do.
Where is it invested, Sharon? Do you know what funds are inside your SEP IRA?
Yes, I do. And it's a little bit of everything. It's a pretty diversified portfolio.
A little bit of everything to diversify your losses. The market is bouncing back. But if there's an alternative in your SEP IRA for a money market fund, I think you've got to take a look at what's inside your plan. First of all, congratulations on being 78 and still working and starting to think about retirement. I think a lot of people might face that in the future, and you seem to have a smile on your face, so that's great. So what I want to say is, you don't want to face this again. Now the market's back 15%. So when you get a minute, look inside to see, is there a very, very short-term U.S. government bond fund? Is there an offer of a money market mutual fund? And take 25% or so and move it out of the stock market on these bounce days and put it into something that's chicken money. Now it's not going to pay you any interest, but you're not going to worry about having money to withdraw to live on.
Thanks so much for your call,
good.
Sharon.
Thank you so much. Yes. I appreciate your help.
Wow. I wonder when Sharon is going to retire. That's pretty awesome.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's lovely. That actually was an inspiring call, frankly.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to Marilyn. Marilyn has a budgeting question. Hi, Marilyn. What's your question for Terry?
I recently purchased a car, and I took financing with the car company at 3.4. And my intention was I have money in a checking account that's accumulated from investments. And then recently, I figured I would take this, get out of the checking account and pay the loan off. But recently, I received an offer from a bank for 0% interest with 3% upfront as a fee. Which would be better, to withdraw my check?
Someone's trying to make money on you. First of all, you never get out of debt by taking on more debt, and you never fill in the hole by paying fees and taking a deeper hole. So here's the question. There's only one big question for you. You wanted this car. You have it now. I agree with you. It's too much in financing to pay. So the question is, if you pay off the car now, how risky is it for you? Do you use up all your cash in your checking account? Do you need that money for emergencies? I want you to tell me your whole financial picture over the phone, but you will know when you look at your living expenses, your income that's guaranteed, whether it's Social Security, a pension, whatever else, if you know that you can afford to pay this car off and you won't need that money for an emergency, then pay off the loan.
Marilyn, does that help?
Yes, that does. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling. Okay, let's move on to Greg. Hi, Greg. This is G. What's your question for Terry? Oh, you okay there? You're on the air.
Hello? That was me. That was me, G. Sorry.
All right, good. Hi, Greg. Go ahead with your question for Terry.
Oh, hi, Terry. Yeah, I have a quick question for you. I'm going to be retiring in about 6 months, and I'll be receiving a bonus check of about $300,000. In September, and I'm 58 years old. I was going to roll it into an IRA, like a stable fund. But I'm wondering now if I should keep it as cash or if I should invest it in an IRA.
Wow, that's awesome.
Whoa, okay. So now we have someone who is happily working till age 78, contemplating retirement, and someone who's working at age 58, contemplating what I will call, from my perspective, early retirement. So there's two things that strike me about your question. First, you said I could put it in an IRA. You haven't said to me, is this a deferred comp kind of a bonus of $300,000, or is this an after-tax bonus of $300,000? Because you couldn't put all that in an IRA.
I'm in education right now, and we're able to, it's difficult to explain, but as opposed to taking the 3% compounded interest, increasing your salary, you can get it up front, but you take a 30% penalty.
All right, but are you able to roll that over into a tax-deferred account?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to say something to you that's hard to understand in the middle of all this financial crisis when I've been advising people that they have to have liquidity in cash. You're young. Your time horizon is just the IRS actuarial tables is 30 years, and sounds like you might live even longer. So you need the long-term growth that the stock market will provide. So I would suggest you roll it over into an IRA And you can maybe start all with all in a money market fund, but put 25% in a balanced fund. You can go to like Vanguard or Fidelity and take one of their balanced funds, index funds, or an equity income fund. And at that point, you might want to just keep rolling another whatever it would be, a couple thousand dollars a month for the next 2 years out of the money market and into the stock market. See, you do need long-term stock market exposure to keep up with inflation. I don't know if all the money they just printed is going to go chugging down the bottom of the bathtub drain, or one day it's going to lead to a sense of what are dollars worth, in which case stocks have always beaten inflation over the long run. But I want you to talk to your tax advisor. This is a perfect time for you. There's a lot of money. You're making a big decision. I'm going to give you a website, wealthramp.com. This is where fiduciary financial advisors are carefully vetted. They are fee only. They are people who promise and pledge in writing to put your interests first. And I don't want to just give you flip advice about a subject this big over the phone. Right. So wealthramp.com, go through the process and spend some time. Have a meeting with at least a good certified financial planner who is a fiduciary, keyword. Okay?
Greg, do you plan to completely retire, or will you continue to work a different type of job?
I plan to take off for about 6 months and then get bored and then go back to work.
Good for you. And when you go back to work, keep saving in some kind of a deferred plan, an IRA, or whatever your new job offers you. You're in a wonderful position, so we just don't want you to blow it. Again, you need individualized advice.
And that's Wealth Grant, you said?
Wealth Ramp.
Wealth Ramp. WealthRamp. Wealth Ramp.
Oh,
it's a service. It's like Match.com for fiduciary financial advisors who are very carefully vetted. These are CFPs who are fee only.
Thanks, Greg, for your call.
Thank you, and stay well, everybody.
Yep, and congratulations on early retirement. But you will be going back to work, so that's a good thing. Terry approves of that. Okay, Terry, this
never have too much money in your old age.
I know. I've noticed that you tend to not really believe in people retiring early.
I think, you know, I haven't. I mean, I think it'd be, you have, not only would you as an individual be bored, but if you can manage your life as I have to be able to do the thing you love the most, and keep on the edge of it, that's just a wonderful blessing that you have. And so I think people as a financial plan should try not to think of retirement. Years ago, I wrote a book called The Savage Number, How Much Money Do You Need to Retire? It was so long ago that I really thought the magic thing was reaching that number, whatever the number was for you to retire and have enough money to withdraw and invest. But the real thing is, retirement is just a state of mind. And if you are lucky enough to be able to continue doing what you love with people you really like, then you don't ever want to retire.
Well, we can tell that you truly do love what you do, and it's a great service. Thanks for being with us, Terry Savage. Check out our website, terrysavage.com. We'll talk to you again next week. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Chi.
A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. Remember the start of 2020 when all we could talk about was legal cannabis? It turns out that Governor Pritzker's stay-at-home order deemed medical and recreational dispensaries and cultivation centers, too, considered them essential businesses, and most have stayed open. Some dispensaries in Chicago have gone to medical only amid the coronavirus outbreak. According to Tom Shuba, he is a reporter over at the Chicago Sun-Times. He has an article that's going to be published a little bit later this afternoon. He has been keeping up with cannabis since before it became legal for recreational use. He says currently that six Chicago dispensaries are medical only, and five are taking pre-orders for recreational. And one dispensary is closed. This is a medical store called Green Gate in Rogers Park, and that's according to Tom Shuba of the Chicago Sun-Times. So we wanted to check in and see how the industry is doing and how they're adapting and pivoting in this new normal. And we want to check in with Chief Communications Officer of Cresco Labs, Jason Erkes. Hi, Jason.
Hey, G, how are you?
Hanging in there. How are you doing?
About the same. Okay. The new normal, working from home.
Absolutely. So we've been hearing some reports that a lot of dispensaries have pivoted to only providing for their medical patients and staying away from doing recreational. Have you been hearing that too?
Yeah, you know, we've heard that, but, you know, we agree with the governor that there are a lot of people that rely on cannabis for their day-to-day wellness, and they don't all have medical cards. So it's important that they continue to have access to what they use as medicine, and that's why the governor deemed this an essential business, the same as he did Walgreens and CVS and other people that provide, you know, pharmacy and medical services to people.
Paring down sort of who the clientele is that have more to do with sort of keeping, you know, making sure that everyone is safely coming into the stores and the dispensaries and getting their supply? Or does it have to do with the fact that there's such limited supply?
You know, the supply is holding strong. More supply is coming to market on a regular basis. But we've obviously had to adapt our business to be more responsive to COVID-19 with increased sanitation and social distancing requirements, you know, while still trying to efficiently serve both our medical and recreational customers. So, you know, this is the new normal for everyone. We want to make sure that we're minimizing the risk for both our employees and our patients and customers, you know, while still being able to provide them, you know, the essential medicine they need for their well-being.
So, Cresco Labs, how many dispensaries do you guys have within the city?
We have one in the city, five in the state, and, you know, they're all open and operational for both medical and recreational customers. And, you know, we plan on keeping them that way unless the situation changes in a way that prevents us from doing that.
Have you seen increased demand? I'm sure that this is a very anxiety-inducing time for many people.
You know, as you were saying earlier, there are a lot of dispensaries that have kind of changed their policies and not offering rack or closing altogether. So it's hard to gauge demand when all the dispensaries aren't open and providing the same service. So, you know, we're certainly seeing an influx of customers, but we don't know where they're coming from. It's also important, you know, for me to talk about the fact that we instituted online ordering on our website, which is sunnyside.shop. So we're mandating that all recreational consumers go online and place their orders, and then they'll receive a ticket, an email ticket, when that order is ready, where they can come to the store and pick it up. That way, they're only coming to the store, verifying their age and paying, and it's really minimizing the amount of time they're spending in the dispensary, and that really helps with our social distancing as well.
So that's one way to ensure the safety of your medical users. I'm assuming that a lot of medical users probably have compromised immune systems and are more susceptible.
Yeah, absolutely. So medical consumers and medical patients, rather, are our top priority. They don't need to order online. They can come in. It's business as usual. You know, they walk right in. And, you know, within the dispensary, we're keeping a 6-foot distance from, you know, from both our wellness advisors that are working in the store and from other consumers and patients. We have signs everywhere. So we're really minimizing the amount of people that are in the store at one time, but also trying to minimize the amount of time people have to spend in the store, so we can make sure we're taking care and providing relief to as many people as we can.
So reporter Tom Shuba over at the Chicago Sun-Times mentioned to me that there's also curbside pickup at some dispensaries, and that's only for medical users. Is that something that you guys have used as well?
Yeah, you know, we're doing that on a case-by-case basis, as we haven't really put that procedure in place yet. Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, who oversees the cannabis program in Illinois, put that in place last week, allowing us to do that. But there's a lot of protocols that really need to be spelled out to make sure we're doing it in a safe way. So for medical patients, we are providing that as a service if requested, and we're looking to expand that once we build out the process to do it the right way.
And for you guys over at Cresco Labs, of course, safety is a top concern. So you say that you guys are wiping things down more, sanitizing more throughout the day.
Yeah, you know, we're in every vertical of this industry, right? So our corporate office is based here. We have huge manufacturing facilities that produce and manufacture all of our products down in Joliet and in Kankakee and one in Lincoln, Illinois, in addition to our dispensaries. And we've instituted, you know, very high sanitation standards on par with what you'd see in major food manufacturing plants from a food safety standard. You know, even our dispensaries, we're wiping down every surface every half hour to make sure that we're minimizing the risk for our patients and employees.
Yeah, and I was going to mention, yeah, I'm sure you're also concerned about your employees as well.
Absolutely. That's a priority for us. We're making sure that their safety you know, is a priority in everything that we do.
So at the start of 2020, when everybody, all the news outlets were covering legal recreational marijuana use, I'm sure that the industry never expected that this would happen.
No, I mean, I don't think anybody expected this
right,
to happen. Right.
Right, no, they didn't. But I'm just, it's just so funny to see. I mean, not funny, but it's just surreal. It's just beyond anyone's imagination, and just sort of like how you guys have had to kind of deal with this.
Yeah, you know, we've certainly had to adapt the way we do things, but, you know, we are glad that the governor and the legislature deemed us essential, as, you know, we know that we provide well-being to a lot of people, whether they have a medical card or not. There's people that rely on this as their form of pain relief, dealing with anxiety, you know, dealing with sleep issues. So it's a great thing that they deemed us essential and that we're still able to provide access, you know, to the patients and consumers across the state. It's definitely a priority.
So at all of your dispensaries, you've been able to keep your regular hours, and are you thinking about extending your hours?
You know, we're looking at that. Our regular hours, you know, we're still open 9 a.m. to 10 p.m., and we're looking to expand within what the state will allow, just to make sure that we're spacing things out throughout the day the best we can, and, again, minimizing the amount of people that are in the store at one time and strictly enforcing those social distancing guidelines to make sure we're protecting everyone. So, you know, we're evaluating everything we can to be able to accommodate the demand in a very safe and efficient way.
And no one really knows how long this is going to go on for. Is delivery an option that you are looking towards? I mean, is the industry trying to pursue, especially for those with medical needs?
You know, it's something we do in other states, and I'm sure it's something that the state of Illinois is evaluating as we're dealing with this crisis right now. But right now, the law doesn't permit delivery in Illinois, but I would guess that it's something they're evaluating, as there's a lot of medical patients, you know, that will have a hard time getting to the dispensary to get their medicine. And we obviously want to make it as convenient as possible so they can get the relief they need on a daily basis.
Well, Jason Urquhart, thank you so much for your time today. Chief Communications Officer for Cresco Labs. A lot more coming up right here on WGN Radio. Heartbreaking to think about all of the small businesses that have been affected. Of course, we've been covering a lot of the restaurants and salons and boutiques, hardware stores, all of the variety of small businesses that make up the great landscape of what it means, the diversity of what it means to live in a city of many neighborhoods. But another sector that's hurting deeply is the arts. Thinking about all the storefront theaters that we have here in Chicago. Of course, we have the larger theaters as well that carry Broadway shows, and we have art galleries and comedy and music venues. Joining us now, though, is the CEO and General Director, Anthony Freud, of the Lyric Opera of Chicago. He is going to talk about the multi-million dollar impact of coronavirus the rest of the season has been canceled, right, Anthony?
Well, not yet.
Okay.
What has been cancelled, which is really heartbreaking for us, is Wagner's enormous Ring Cycle, which is the largest undertaking any opera company can ever produce. I always think it's worth acknowledging that we're in the midst of a truly global national catastrophe and tragedy within which we are a microscopic part. But my colleagues and I at Lyric have been focusing intently on trying to make the right judgments in these extraordinary, unique circumstances. Obviously, we want to put our audiences, our staff, our artists' health and safety absolutely first, and clearly we had no option but to cancel Wagner's Ring Cycles. It was heartbreaking for all of us, especially for our artists and technicians, and we're talking about hundreds of people being involved in performing the Ring, but it was an unavoidable decision.
So how much money, an estimate of how much revenue did you lose by canceling the Ring?
Well, as I say, the Ring is the largest undertaking that any opera company can contemplate, and we're looking at an impact of between $15 and $20 million.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. And this was something, an undertaking that you guys have been working on for a very long time.
It's really a decade of planning. The Ring is made up of four gigantic pieces of music theater. We've been introducing them one by one for the last three seasons. And this season, we were going to bring the project that has been, as I say, a decade or so in the planning to its fantastic conclusion. But sadly, it wasn't to be.
Well, I've been lucky enough through my work to have been able to attend the Lyric Opera a few times. Of course, I'm a total novice when it comes to the opera. I don't really understand how, you know, the business works, or let alone sometimes I don't quite understand everything that's happening on stage, except that I know that it's beautiful. Can you explain how difficult it would be even to postpone this and reschedule this because of the way that your schedules work?
Yes, opera companies plan many years into the future. We are a large-scale art form involving hundreds of people. We have an orchestra, we have a chorus, we have a large technical staff apart from our administrative staff and, of course, our guest solo singers. The Ring is something that Lyric Opera will eventually get back to. But for the moment, we're focusing on how to deal with the fallout from the cancellation of the Ring, how to ensure that our institution is protected as best it can be to continue navigating through these tempestuous waters, and of course, how to protect our individuals. And our challenge really is to find the right balance between protecting our individuals and protecting our institutions, always bearing in mind that we won't protect our individuals if we also fail to protect our institution. The process of dealing with the fallout from the cancellation of the Ring has been happily a very collaborative one, and I really want to pay tribute to our union colleagues, because through collaborating with them, we have come to an arrangement that I think is fair and represents an appropriate balance, protecting individuals and protecting the institution.
So, yeah, let's talk about all the singers, the orchestra, the production team, the design team. The list goes on and on. What's going to happen? How are they going to be able to put food on the table and take care of their families?
Well, as I say, we've been working closely with our union colleagues, and we're talking about three major union relationships, union partners, and have come to an understanding with all of them about how to resolve this that I think is a fair resolution. Clearly, as we move ahead, we need to think carefully about the other projects that we have planned for the remainder of the season. And as everything changes on a minute-by-minute, let alone a day-by-day basis, we're constantly reviewing our options and really discussing how we can best reach decisions that, as I say, protect the health and well-being of our company, our artists, our audiences, while at the same time protecting the interests of the company as well.
So, Anthony, will they still get a paycheck then?
We have come to an arrangement with our unions whereby all the people involved with the Ring are receiving something. Yes.
Oh, yes. And I also saw a recent article that said that many full-timers took a pay cut to benefit freelancers as well, which was a very wonderful thing to do.
It was wonderful, and that was how we were able to get to the arrangement that we reached with the unions. As I say, it was entirely collaborative, and I really pay tribute to their participation with us. At the end of the day, when you're dealing with truly existential challenges, we're all on the same side. We're working together to ensure that the arts bounce back when we get to a period of recovery, and that Lyric bounces back.
And of course, it's hard to think about the arts when people are worried about keeping a roof over their head and keeping their families fed. But can you give us a final word on why the arts are just integral? You know, it's such a huge part of what makes Chicago, Chicago.
I think the arts are integral to the well-being of every society. And as you say, Chicago has an extraordinary arts infrastructure. I believe that the quality of our lives depends upon a vibrant, thriving art scene. And from my point of view, the arts will never have been more important than working with our communities, with our city, to ensure that when the moment for recovery begins, it is a collaborative, really fulfilling process. My view is that the arts, after recovery in our post-coronavirus world, will be more indispensable than ever.
Well, thank you so much, the Anthony Freud. He is the Lyric Opera of Chicago president, CEO, and general director. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.